Our scripture this morning is John chapter 11, verses 17 through 27 and 38 through 44, which begins on page 990 in our Pew Bibles. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." The word of the Lord.
Right, good morning again, people of peace. For those of you who may be visiting for the first time, I'm Winston. I'm one of the pastors here at Peace. A warm, warm welcome to you. So last week, if you remember, we were considering a very, very big question. And the question is there resurrection? You know, is there this possibility of being raised to life after death by God? And especially we were looking at it from a biblical perspective and asking the question, is this a real biblical hope? And we discover from Jesus' own words that he says it very, very much is a biblical hope. And he answered the Sadducees by reminding them that it was right there in the beginning, God speaking to Moses directly himself. But today follows up a little bit on that. So you say, okay, cool. It's really, really nice to know that resurrection is a biblical hope. But today's sermon addresses the next question, the follow-up question that some of you may have, especially those of you who have been blessed with a questioning mind and maybe a slightly skeptical spirit. And the question you may ask is it even possible? You know, it's one thing to hold out the possibility of resurrection as a spiritual hope, and that sounds really, really good and really, really nice, especially for religious people. But it's a different thing, a really, really different order of thing to know for certain that it's real with proof and that it's not just wishful thinking. So it's a good question if you have that question in your heart, and Jesus is about to answer that question for you. So today's story marks one of those high drama points in Jesus' ministry, and it can, in a sense, be divided almost as a play or as a movie into two big acts. Act one is the first one that the first part that we heard, and I refer to that as the big claim. But act two is very, very important and is connected to act one, and it is backing up that claim. That's very, very important. So that's kind of the structure to it. But importantly, running through this particular story are two important threads that we need to take note of. The first one is the fact that we need to trace the ups and downs of this life of faith. Those threads actually reveal something very, very interesting about ourselves and about God. The first one is that the life of faith can be a life of up and down. But the second thread, which is also an important thread, is we discover who Jesus is. So the story speaks to us personally in terms of our life of faith, but it also gives us and opens up a window into understanding who Jesus really is. So what's the backdrop? So the backdrop to today's story is Lazarus, Jesus' close friend, is dying. And as I say Lazarus, I'm going to ask you for permission. It's one of those tricky words in the Bible. And I'm going to have to mention his name a few times. So if I slur on Lazarus, I apologize right now. I've been practicing whole week, Lazarus, Lazarus. And at some point in time, I just know I'm going to get tripped up in saying it. Anyway, Lazarus is Jesus' close friend, and he is dying. And his two sisters, Martha and Mary, who we discover and we'll see next week as well, are just as close to Jesus. They send for Jesus because they hear that he's not too far away, and they send for him and they ask him to come quickly and to come and heal Lazarus, because they've seen Jesus do this for other people, so they know this is something that Jesus can do. And oh, he's not that far away, so they send for him and they ask him to come. And we hear in the story that Jesus is in a town about 2 miles away, but Jesus does something very, very interesting. He intentionally or deliberately delays. He doesn't go when they call for him. And he tells the disciples who are with him at this particular point in time, because they're also probably wondering, like, what's happening? Why aren't we going there? And he says to them, for your sake, I'm glad that I'm not there so that you may believe. Believe what? Well, good question. Wait, and we'll get to see. So act one is that first act, which I call the big claim. But it opens with this very, very interesting scene. That first scene is almost a scene of disappointment. So Jesus arrives days later, and we discover that Lazarus is dead and buried 4 days ago. And these sisters are utterly, utterly devastated. They are devastated, obviously, by the loss of their brother in the prime of his life. But let's be honest, they're also devastated by what looks like the seeming indifference of their very, very close friend. He wasn't that far away. They sent for him, and it takes 4 days to arrive. And Martha has to be one of my favorite biblical characters. I always say that Martha is almost like the female version of Peter. What you see is what you get. Okay? So with Martha, there isn't any sort of varnish per se. So Martha hears that Jesus is close by, and she goes. And what's the first words to come out of Martha's mouth? Very interesting. She says to the Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. Now, I know we read that on the page and we read it so very gently. If you had been there, my brother would not have died. Believe you me, I don't think that's quite the way in which she delivered this to the Lord. It is more like, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. Talk about a guilt trip. Okay? Talk about a guilt trip. Here is Martha pointing an accusing finger at Jesus and saying, Lord, if you had been there, you would not have died. If you had shown up, Lord, when I needed you, this crisis could have been averted. And now the worst thing has happened. He is dead. He is dead. If you had been there. And so she voices a disillusionment directly to Jesus. And I believe that as she voices that, in a way, she's speaking for many of us. Our disillusionment with God. I'm sure many of us have felt that, and some of you may be feeling that way right now this morning. I don't know what's happening in your life. Something may be happening to you personally. Something may be happening in your circumstances that's really, really weighing you down. And you've been praying for God to do something, for there to be some kind of breakthrough, but you feel let down by God. So Martha is speaking for you in saying, Lord, where were you when I needed you to show up, when I called for you? Where were you? Lord, I needed you to come and help out. Where were you when I needed you most? And Lord, I feel really abandoned and alone in my time of crisis. Any of you ever felt that way at some point in time in your spiritual walk? God, where are you? I thought that you'd be here. I thought that you'd show up. I thought that if I prayed to you, this crisis would be averted. So that's what comes straight out of Martha. And that, I believe, is a really, really common experience of faith. That's why I said that running through the story are two important threads. There's that personal experience of the ups and downs of the life of faith, but there's also what we're going to see is that vision of who Jesus is. But we're focusing here on Martha and her experience. And we discover something very, very interesting, especially at times of struggle, especially at times of loss, and especially at times of grief. And that is when that hits us, you know what it tends to do? It tends to strip away any pretense. Isn't that true? Often when people have been hit with some kind of trauma and some kind of crisis, what comes out at you is unvarnished, raw emotion. And this is exactly what comes out at Jesus from Martha right here. She points an accusing finger at Jesus. She points an accusing finger at God and saying, "Where were you? Where were you?" And that is often the cry, the soulful cry of our hearts. Lord, where were you? But we move to the next part of the next scene. So the first part of the scene is the sense of disappointment, but we move now to kind of the next scene, and that is what I call the scene of frustration because of deferred hope. And it's quite interesting. This is one of those passages where we get a lot of dialogue, so we actually get to hear this conversation between Jesus and Martha. And so Jesus assures her, "Martha, your brother will rise again." She is not accepting that. She fires straight back at the Lord. "I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day." It's again one of those things that we read and it seems so flat on the page, but she's actually throwing it back at him. Like she's saying to him, "Lord, I know. Why are you focusing on future realities? I know that's going to happen. Lord, at this point in time, future kingdom promises are doing me no good right now. I know that he will rise in the resurrection at the last day. But Lord, I need your help now." Interesting. And we see this unvarnished, raw emotion, the soulful cry coming from Martha, straight at the Lord. And then Jesus answers her with this amazing claim, this massive claim. His answer to her is, "Martha, I am the resurrection and the life." In other words, I am the source of resurrection hope because I am the source of life itself. It's nothing other than a claim to divinity. What is Jesus saying to her? He's saying to her directly, "Martha, I am God." It must have hit her. And he strengthens his claim by that very, very evocative opening words, "I am." Now, might not ring a bell to you, but if you are a good Jew, you know what those words mean. Those are not just ordinary words of identifying who I am. That is God's revelation of his own name to Moses, a name that Jews held most dear, a name that they wouldn't even take on their lips, that name, I am. Moses, when God met him at the burning bush, and God commissions him, and he says, "Whom shall I say sent me? Who are you?" God answers him and says, "I am who I am. Tell them, I am sent you." So it looks like innocent words on a page, just somebody identifying themselves. But to any good Jew, those words carried lots of power. And Jesus explains a little bit further when he says, "I am the resurrection and I am the life." What does he mean by resurrection? He means that those who believe in me will live even though they die. In other words, the dead like Lazarus, those who trust me, they will be raised to new life. But also, I am life itself. So whoever lives by believing me in me will never die. So all of those who accept me as their life source enjoy life forever in me. A massive claim. I am the resurrection and the life. Very interesting. But we can't just end there, because in actual fact, that big claim that Jesus makes requires an absolutely massive shift. Martha and all the other disciples around Jesus, they need to shift their thinking, and they need to move from seeing Jesus as a friend and being this faithful follower to a worshiper. The Messiah, this earthly king that they knew was going to be sent from God, they discover is God himself. Jesus is no mere agent of God. Jesus is God. And this must have blown their minds, because they were expecting the Messiah. Remember her answer, "Oh Lord, I know who you are. You are the Messiah, the one sent from God." So she knew that. And she was looking forward to that, a real, real Jewish hope that this earthly ruler, this earthly king would come from God and establish God's kingdom reign on earth. That they were looking forward to, but that king would be God himself was something that they didn't expect. And so she realizes that she needs to move from being a follower to a worshiper. And again, friends, we need to understand the mindset of the Jews of that particular day, and even Jews today. Oh, you can have kings, and kings deserve honor, absolutely right. Kings deserve obedience, absolutely. Kings deserve homage because they are God's representative on earth. But what's the one thing a good Jew would not do to a king? Bow down and worship. And yet Jesus is saying that Messiah, this earthly king that you are looking forward to, is God. God himself, fusing messiahship with God, must have blown her mind, absolutely blown her mind, must have blown the minds of the disciples around them. And we discover that as the story unfolds, you can see that Martha is really struggling to make these massive cognitive steps. Because what follows kind of shows that she's still struggling to wrap her head around this. She knows that Jesus is the Messiah and that she should follow him, but that she should worship him is something which just catches her absolutely by surprise. So that big claim requires a big shift, moving from being a friend and a follower, a faithful follower, to a worshiper. Very, very interesting. So Jesus makes this powerful claim. And today we see lots of politicians and sportsmen love to make big claims about the things that they can do. What's the ultimate proof? Being able to back it up. You can make the claim, that's one thing. Can you do it? That's another thing. And so we move to Act 2, that sense where Jesus is now going to back up this claim. And the first scene we come across is a scene of what I refer to as falling back. So let's pick up again on the dialogue. So it says that Jesus goes and they reach the tomb and he says, take away the stone. And this is why I really love Martha. Guess what comes out of Martha's mouth again. Very, very interesting. But Lord, by now there's already a bad odor. In other words, Lord, he's decaying and smelly. And she goes, do you want to raise that? So she has this picture in her mind, almost like today, what we would see as like a Frankenstein monster. Okay, his body has been lying in that grave in that heat, and by now he's a little bit mushy and he's a little bit gooey. And Lord, I really did need your help, but I'm not sure that's quite what I had in mind. Okay, do you really want to raise that? And I love the way the Old King James Version expresses it. It says it's so wonderful. Lord, by now he stinketh. Okay? In other words, Lord, he is smelly. He is ripe and he is rotten. Do you really want to raise that? And again, that's why I said I love Martha. She just has to be one of those such human characters in the Bible. And we discover that what's Martha back up to? Back up to limiting God again. Limiting God again. She just had this massive, massive, mind-blowing revelation. And guess what the next thing she does? But Lord, by now. Amazing. And I think that in the end, really, I would describe Martha as probably being a realist. She's one of those people who says, hey, 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 life is like this, and I deal with the facts in front of me. And so what does she do? She confronts Jesus with what is an obvious reality of the situation, as though Jesus didn't know this. Jesus didn't know that he's been dead 4 days, and by now he's pretty, pretty smelly. And again, we see in Martha a common experience of the life of faith that many of us have, and that is we can have this great encounter with God one moment and really enjoy that and be on this absolute high, and guess what happens? The next moment we are back down again. Back to limiting God, back to seeing things from our narrow perspective only. And you got to say, thank you, Martha, because at least you gave some expression to the faith that I sometimes have. I can share with you this week, the Lord has really been testing me in this particular area as well. How big is your faith and how big is your vision of me? And it gets really, really big, and I read the scriptures and I get really excited. And then I kind of step outside of my office and I face the real world out there, and it tends to shrink just a little bit. Okay, and I don't feel as confident any longer. I sometimes feel that way about the challenge that we have as a church. Really, really fired up, and I read God's word and I realize that the Lord is the one who's carrying us. He's the one who's going to fill us. He's the one who sends revival. Our hope is in him. And then I look at the stats. And guess what I feel? I feel just a little bit heavy, just a little bit intimidated. So we all have that, my friends, in different ways, that sense of the ups and downs of faith. We have this wonderful encounter, this deep, deep revelation of who God is, and it fills us with hope and it fills us with joy. And just like that, those old patterns come back. And so Jesus here is a little bit firmer with her this time round. So Jesus kind of gives her a gentle but a firm rebuke. He says, "Did I not tell you, if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So Jesus tells her that. So we're waiting in suspense to see what's going to happen. And the last scene is this wonderful scene of God's glory revealed. Like God the Father did in Genesis 1, Jesus merely speaks the words, and what he says becomes reality. Lazarus, come out. And out of death comes new life. That's an amazing display of God's power, my friends. All that God needs to do is just say something, and it comes into being. And Jesus demonstrates that. And they watch this. Lazarus, come out. Jesus doesn't have to do anything fancy. He doesn't have to do any kind of incantation or anything. He merely speaks those words. And the reality that he speaks into being comes forth. Out of death comes new life. That reality comes right there out of the grave. It's an amazing display of God's power. Out of death's clutch, Jesus loosens it and brings life. And why is that so important? Because death, my friends, is the opposite of life. Remember what Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life." So Jesus is the source of life. So death is the very opposite of what Jesus is and what Jesus seeks to do in the world, and that is bring life. And death doesn't only end life, but it also brings decay and it brings disintegration. So death, in a sense, almost destroys the good things that God has created. So it's a powerful, powerful spiritual moment. It's not just Jesus overcoming death itself, but Jesus overcoming those spiritual forces that work against God. And Jesus shows us in this wonderful display that he is able to reverse death's power and reverse death's effects. And it shows us this powerful demonstration that God has the power to revive, and by that I mean bring back to life that which death has killed. But because Lazarus has been dead for 4 days, we discover that Jesus, because he's God, also has the power to restore, to recreate what decay has destroyed. Who has that kind of power, my friends? Only God. To take something which is dead and gone and bring it back to life. It reminds me of the funny story that I heard about the scientist who was a avowed atheist and says, "I don't believe in God. Oh my goodness, with all the wonderful things that we can do today, just give me a lab and I can show you that I can bring life into being." And he's having this conversation with God. "God, let me show you. I can take that stuff and I can bring it into being. I can bring life into being." And God just turns to him and says, "That's fine. Bring your own stuff. Okay? Don't use my stuff. Bring your own stuff." Okay? Just a wonderful picture of the fact that God is able to bring something out of nothing. What death and decay have destroyed, God can bring hope and new life out of that. God has the power to revive, my friends, and God has the power to restore. That is the hope of resurrection that we have. And so what's Jesus' words? "Take off the grave clothes. Take it off him. Take off those wrappings of death and set him free." And that's the hope that we as Christians are looking forward to one day. One day when we die, we will shed this body of death and we will be given a new body. This wrapping and this trapping that we live in at the moment, it will be gone, but God will give us something new in its place. And this is a demonstration of that death has its grip on us, but God is able to loosen the grip of death and is able to bring new life out of that. That, my friend, should make you feel happy, and that I feel deserves an amen. Okay? You're talking about what resurrection hope means? That is what resurrection hope means. It means a reversal of everything, even the most powerful force in this world, that force of death, the thing that we know we will all face. Jesus showing, "I am the master of even that. That is nothing to me. My mere word turns that around." So friends, what are some of the key lessons that we learn in this story and we learn about ourselves? Well, I think we've seen that in the life of Martha. We discover that we all struggle with inconsistency of faith. I'm the first one to put my hand up with that particular one. the ups and downs of the life of faith. We all struggle with that. Why? Because old habits die hard. We hit that high and then we're back to limiting God again. You want some good news? Okay, clearly you don't want some good news, but okay, I'll share it with you anyway. Would you like some good news? Okay, the good news is that God understands that. But the real hope is that it's not up to us. What does Jesus say? Believe in me. I am the one who holds you. I am the one who carries you. I am the one who's with you through all of that. Believe in me. That faith that you have, you discover, is a faith that God has given us. And we discover that Jesus says, my sheep, I know them by name, and they are in my hand, and nobody can take them out of my hand. Nobody can take them out of my clutch. Death may kill us in our physical bodies, but my friends, Jesus has us, and we will live forever. So it's not up to us. Believe in me. Very, very importantly. But what do we learn about God? And I think this is a lesson which is tough for us to accept, and it's hard even for me as a preacher to explain, because sometimes you can explain it in a way which seems terribly insensitive to what people are going through. So I'm going to explain it to you, and I hope you understand where I'm coming from, because it's an important spiritual lesson for us to understand that sometimes God permits hardship for his glory and our greater good. Do you see that in the story? Jesus, come now, come now. He's dying. And what does Jesus do? Jesus delays for 4 days intentionally because he knows that he's going to reveal something to Martha that she could never, ever expect. He's going to reveal the greater glory of God that she couldn't imagine. But she had to go through that pain in order to get there. So sometimes the Lord permits these hardships for his glory and our greater good, friends. And sometimes, and here is the other word of hope that I have for you, and that is in that point of deepest despair is often our deepest encounter with God. And I'm not sure if many of you can attest to that, but I can attest to that. There have been times when I've been at my lowest ebb, and I've gone through that experience and then realized God was with me. God was with me. And my faith is deepened and my vision of who God is expanded. And I hope that is for you, because that's what God is wanting to say here. Our deepest encounter comes often at our point of greatest need. But what is God doing in that? I think God is giving us a sense of hope that in the pain and in the misery of life and in the suffering that we go through, there is some redemptive value in that. Great redemptive value in that. And we discover here that Martha, and afterwards, as she's probably relating this story, realizes that I thought that God wasn't listening to me. I thought that God wasn't even hearing me. And then I discovered God was right there with me, in front of me. And not only was God right there with me and in front of me, but God revealed more of himself to me in that particular experience. Absolutely amazing. But it's a tough lesson. That doesn't mean that everything bad that's happening in your life has this, but sometimes God permits hardships, friend, in our lives for his greater glory and for our greater good. And very, very importantly, we need to remember that our perspective is limited when we see things only from our vantage point. And this story is meant to open our spiritual eyes so that we see things differently. And we need to look into the face of Jesus to see who God really is. But we also look into the face of Jesus so we get a different view on the reality in which we live. Because our experience is part of reality, but it is captured within a greater reality. And we need to look to Jesus to understand what that is. So here's some questions for you to consider. Do you want to know who God is? Well, this story tells us very, very simply, look to Jesus. He is the great I am in the flesh, taken on our form. But friends, do you want to know what God can do? Look no further than Jesus. Jesus has the power to change your circumstances, and Jesus has the power to transform your life. And that's the hope that I'm hoping that this passage instills in you today. I don't know what you're going through, but God knows. And friends, you've got to believe that God has the power to change your circumstances. And even if he doesn't change your circumstances, as he didn't do for Martha and for Mary in the beginning of this particular story, he still has the power to transform your life. Because what is the hardest thing that all of us struggle with? Like Martha, the ups and downs of life. We think we can do it all on our own, and we try and we fail. And there are things that are happening in our life, and Jesus is saying, I am that power to transform your life. If you're wanting to turn your life around, you can try on your own and you'll get only so far, but you're probably going to be tripping yourself up again. But the true power to transform your life comes from me. I have that power. And what is the confidence that you need? Well, the fact that Jesus can bring life out of death. That has to be the greatest confidence that you can have, that God can do that. God can take your life and turn it around, friends. So what can God do? Look no further than Jesus. What hope does God offer? Listen to Jesus' words to Martha. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the source of life. And so the final question for all of us to think about, my friends, is how do I experience this glorious hope? Well, in exactly the same way that Martha did, you need to move from just being a friend and a follower to a worshiper. Because Jesus asks her, do you believe this? After he's revealed himself to her. And she says, yes, Lord, I believe. I believe that you are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You are the one coming to the world. She's still thinking of Jesus purely in his earthly terms. And as a result of the story, she would now add a fourth element. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Christ. You are the Son of God. You are the one that God has sent into the world. I believe that you are God himself. And you are worthy of worship. A total change in her, in the way in which she sees Jesus. From being a friend and a faithful follower, nothing wrong with that. But being a king worthy of worship. My friends, that is the message, or that is the question that Jesus is asking each and every single one of us. Do you believe this? And if you do believe this, have you come to place your faith and trust in Jesus as the one who is the resurrection and the life? So I'm going to extend an invitation to you, my friends. If that's something which you have never done and you feel that Jesus is calling you, because Jesus is calling you through this story, do you believe this? And what Jesus is calling you to do is to take that step of faith, coming to place your faith and your trust in him, not just as a great teacher, not just as a great prophet, not just as a great leader, but as God himself. That is what Jesus is calling us to. And I trust that you will take that step today. And brothers and sisters, those of us who have come to place our faith and trust in Christ, isn't it interesting? We see that the life of faith this side of Christ's second coming is always a life of up and down. But the Lord wants us to get this vision of who he is so that that vision can continue to carry us forward and to fill us with hope. And I hope that it does today. If you're feeling that there's something in your life that you cannot change, I trust and I hope that you will hold on to that vision of the fact that Jesus can transform your circumstances. Jesus can change your life. Jesus is able to give us all a new heart and a new start. That is a God, I believe, worthy of worship. Amen.